This is the Bonneville Up to Speed Podcast. I'm Kevin Oste, and this is a podcast covering all things land speed racing, from vintage small displacement motorcycles all the way up to cutting-edge streamliners and everything in between. And today, we're coming to you from the PRI show in Indianapolis, more specifically from the ARP display, and we're joined by our good friend, Mr. Chris Raske. Chris, welcome.
How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So you have been a gearhead your whole life, but you've kind of gone through this arc of being on a land speed team to now being behind the wheel more and more. So let's talk a little bit about the very beginning, right? So how did you get into playing with cars in the first place?
My dad's family, when they immigrated from Germany over, they traded with a needed auto repair, and they went to this shop called Duttweiler Automotive, and so as a kid I was always going by there, and they got their cars worked on, and so I knew Ken's father when I was a little kid, and of course Kenny Duttweiler was always back in there doing tune-ups and carburetors and working on hill climbing motorcycles and drag boats and whatever else, all kinds of crazy performance stuff. Years later down the road, I was going to be working on tractors all my life, and there was a falling out with the gentleman that I was doing field repair with, and so I left that shop and I stopped by Kenny Duttweiler's just to see what was going on. He says, "What are you doing?" I said, "Well, I think I'm looking for a job." So this was in 1983, so I was out of a job, I guess, for about an hour, and I went to work at Duttweiler Performance.
Wow.
So Kenny still being involved with every kind of racing, whether it was a three-quarter midget with an 836cc Honda engine on alcohol, or a trophy truck, or even we built two Skyhawks in 88 and 89 with Buick V6s to run the Salt. So that was the first time I got to go out to the Salt.
Gotcha.
And I actually, it was in 89, and I ran a Pontiac 2+2 for a gentleman out there that he wanted us to build a car. And so I got a little taste for it. I went 142 miles an hour.
Uh-huh. That 2+2, was that the G-body style, like the Monte Carlo?
Correct, with the slope window, the
yeah.
NASCAR.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun, and left there and really didn't go back to the Salt for a while. But I continued to work with Kenny and with Steve Watt, getting involved with a car called the Speed Demon, which everybody knows and I love.
For sure.
He asked me to come work on the team. And so we were working. I've been working on, of course, I started with ARP in 1996.
Okay.
And continued to work with Kenny on different race car projects, different things. But then I started working, it's probably been 14 years ago, with Steve Watt and the Speed Demon.
So you were mentored by one of the best engine builders on the planet, hanging around at Duttweiler's.
I was very, very fortunate to get the experience that I got to receive because of so many different projects. There's different builders that maybe they only work on a Ford, or they only work on a Chevy, or a certain type of combination. And I was just very fortunate and blessed that I got to work on a lot of different things. Down to even one day our fabricator quit and I had to start making intercoolers. and so that came along, that what I learned there. But then we hired Steve Watt to come make headers for us for the twin turbo cars. And so that built our relationship with him. And so once again, when he got involved with the Speed Demon, he asked me to come along and help. It's been a very special part of my life ever since I started doing that. There's so many people out there that are really great people. Eventually, Wayne Jessel asked if I would wanted to drive his truck. And of course I did, and it took about 4 years to, it's just between the programs that he was running and what we were doing with the speed demon when, you know, we'd have a thing, just the stars did not align to where I got into that truck. And so at one point two years ago, Wayne was going to have me drive the truck. He couldn't come out for some reason for Speed Week. And I felt really bad. I got excited about it, you know. So I had a little emptiness in my stomach when Wayne made the call that he couldn't come. And a good friend of mine who's here at the show too is Brian Crower. I was telling him about it. He goes, "Wait, I'll call you back." And he had me sent me a phone number of Jay Meager and Greg Waters with a 369 Roadster. And he said, "You can drive this car." And I said, that car's historically famous in the salt world. I said, "They can let me drive that car." So I called them. I eventually did call them. And they said, "Yeah, we'd be happy if you could shake the car down with the new engine combination and just run a couple passes in it to get your licensing."
Nice.
And that set in motion, because those gentlemen were nice enough to make that offer to me. I got my E&D license, and then Wayne called up because the salt was so good, and Wayne goes, "Chris, I'm coming out for World Finals and you need to drive the truck no matter what." So after that, Wayne wanted me to do a test run in the truck because I'd never driven it before. So I went my 200 pass and got my next license, and so then we went out and made a qualifying run, and the truck just, I mean, it's interesting. It gets a little wiggle about 200, 204.
Did they tell you that?
I called Jimmy Barden, who drove the truck many times, and his answer was, "Okay, when it does that and it's going to do it," he goes, "don't do anything. Just wish it in the right direction and it'll go."
Wish it.
Of course, he is the gentleman that's gone backwards in that truck too at a very high rate of speed.
Well, he wished for the wrong thing that time.
So that's kind of the how it started coming along. And so then we did get I got my red hat with Wayne.
I hadn't noticed that you had a red hat,
by the way.
You didn't
know I had a red hat?
No.
It's right here.
Yeah, I see it right over there. All of Facebook has turned red because of your hat, which is awesome.
Yeah. So then February, after that year, the next February, I actually was talking to Clay Milliken, a pretty nice drag racer out there in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "I hear you're going to drive that car." And I'm like, what are you talking about? What car? He goes, "I was talking to George and you're going to drive his car." Okay, that sounds really exciting.
But, sure, but you didn't talk to George.
I didn't talk to George. Well, George called me one day in February and said, "Do you want to drive my car?" And that's like, wow.
Yeah, so, and at this point, you're still on the crew chief, are you on the crew of the Speed Demon? So you're there all the time, and you're interacting with George Poteet and everybody else. But you didn't really see that coming.
Not at all, not at all. We have such a great team, and I unfortunately have such a great bunch of friends that are involved with the everybody was willing to help me do this. And Simpson Racing, Alan at Simpson, he did anything he could to help me go through. He says, "If I had an opportunity like this, you know, I'd we'd do it." And so I was trying not to get too overexcited about it, because sometimes things don't work out.
But, for sure, yeah.
But when we got to the salt, George asked me a question, which I probably can't say on the radio, but he took me out and drove me around for about 4 hours, giving me some of his wisdom about running that car down the track.
Wow.
And it's the guy is, if anybody ever would question his ability for driving and the talent that he has, they're crazy. He is very focused.
Well, he's gone 400 plus more than anybody, right? I mean,
yeah, 56 or whatever, seven times over 400 miles an hour. He's gone 481 miles an hour.
You don't do that not knowing what you're doing. And live.
So one of the last things he told me after our driving around up and down the Salt and taking me to the timing tower and introducing me to people that I had not even met, mm-hmm. he goes, when you get in that car like you want to get in it, and when you get out of that car, you get out of it and you don't embarrass us. You don't embarrass the team, you don't embarrass me, you don't embarrass the car. And
awesome.
and we wanted to show me how to get out, and I said, well, George, I have watched every video of him in the car always anyhow, and he's very exact in the way what he does at every run. And I showed him, and I did exactly like he did, because whatever he's doing, it works.
It works, yeah. That's really interesting, because there's a couple things there. The tremendous pride that he has in the team and in the operation and for the Salt and the respect for everything that he wants to make sure that when people see anything with that operation, that it's top notch. And it's kind of funny, because I think Chevrolet needs to do that same kind of training with people that buy new Corvettes. Mm-hmm. How many times do you see some guy pull up in a Corvette and he falls out of the car? And the car that you're talking about is the only one like it in the world. It's not like you can go down to the corner and try one on. You know, this is a purpose-built streamliner that, quite honestly, has to be tough to fit into.
George is a little taller than me, and that car's tight for me. I thought, oh man, it's going to be kind of roomy, and you put a 20 suit fire suit on, and you get in there and get all strapped in. It's a little snug environment, and George makes it look so easy when he drives the car. And the first time I went, he instructed me when we made my licensing run, I couldn't go over 300, and so we had it set up to about 304.
Yeah.
And he told me, make sure you watch that canopy that's all latched. Make sure everything's perfect on when you do. And I did, and I thought we were, but when I took off, I probably got out to about the mile and a quarter, and the left front corner of the canopy popped up.
No.
And I could see the Salt through it, and I don't know how fast I was going. I was probably going already couple hundred plus mile an hour on the thing, and it seems like it took forever, but I watched it, and I knew I wanted to get my license upgraded, and because the fact that I've worked in that car and I know every part of that car, I made
you made a Chuck Yeager decision.
Chuck Yeager decision, said I'd give it a little bit more gas.
Yeah, there you go.
So I motored on down at I didn't get it, take it up to 300, but I took it up to 287 at the 3 mile and clicked it, and pulled the chutes, because they got to do all the certain things to, they watch you to license up, and so I got that handled, and went to pull off the tracks. As soon as that happens, you get that thing down to like, it gets down to 99 miles an hour, you can pull off. So I went, no big deal. I went to turn the wheel, and it has 25 degrees in the front end. So it wants to go straight, and it's not easy to turn that wheel.
No, it's like a chopper front end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I did that, and that went well. And then my second run, we blew a burst panel, because we used the same ProMod turbos that on the AA 555, we used those same turbos on the 256.
Okay.
So the thing, the big block Chevy, when I did that and I took off the starting line, I didn't follow what George told me to do. George says, when you get in that car, you drive it one way and that's with your foot to the floor. And George does drive it that way. I got in that car and I touched the pedal, and it pushed me so far back in that seat, and I was just hanging on for dear life watching what was going on.
Yeah.
So you switch to the little engine with those big turbos, and Kenny Dutwater explained it to me best. He said, it's like a 125 two-stroke or like an 80 cc two-stroke. He says, you got it just mashed to the floor, and it's going to get along until it gets up on the pipe.
And then it gets angry.
And then it gets it goes.
Yeah.
So my second run, we do a burst panel because the turbos were surging, and I did a pull off about the 1 mile. And then so we changed the burst panel and got right back in line, and we went out again. And on that pass, it did exactly what Kenny said, and it just started pulling, and I definitely didn't want to embarrass George or the team. Mm-hmm. And I ended up going 391 miles an hour with an exit of 389.
Oh, man.
And that was with the with two connecting rods hung out at the 3 miles. So I went from, I think, 321 miles an hour to 391 miles an hour with a V6.
Wow, wow, wow. Man, there is so much going on there. So, you know, part of the thing on this car is you guys changed the class by changing the engine and stuff. So that makes it a different car. It's got to drive 100% different, you know, outside of the dynamics of steering and, mm-hmm. and brakes. So to be able to get two complete, you know, packages down and understand what they're going to do and get the feel of them, most people can't master one. And it's not like you get 100 runs in a row. So every time it has to be a pretty new experience.
Exactly. And we've had some incredible days, and we've had some sad days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if the car is running on all cylinders, that car, it's a beautiful car. It'll run 400 miles an hour as long as it's running. And so the fact that we can do a class change so quickly, we had a lot of luck too. That's the thing. People say they're going to go out to Bonneville and set the world on fire. Bonneville would teach you a lesson.
You're going to set yourself on fire.
And so we've been very fortunate, but we've also, having George Potita as a car owner that is probably the most generous guy out there and more passionate about the sport than anybody out there, I think. But there is definitely a lot of wonderful, great people out there, and I was really happy to see you coming out there now and hanging out with us.
Well, it's cool, and it's you know, it's what they, I agree with what they say. If you go out once, you're going to be back. I mean, it's a bunch of different aspects that are really cool about it. It's, yes, it's the racing, but then it's the pit action, and it's the people coming together to make a team to focus on trying to do something that, like you said, it's not easy. And it's always interesting to see people in the beginning try it, and they might bring whatever racing background they have, which doesn't apply. It's not a drag race. It's not a road. It's nothing. It's completely different. So there's that learning curve. But the other thing that's really cool is how helpful most people are. You know, there's always people willing to see somebody else go fast and be successful. And you have that in racing, but it's like a lot in the land speed world.
Correct. And George, we bring a shop with us. You know, we bring extra equipment, extra welder, extras, all extra stuff. And George's pit, the Speed Demon pit, is always open to anybody that needs help. They need fabrication. They need tools. You know, of course, if you need bolts, we have a full assortment of fasteners on the truck. Hoses made, whatever it is. But likewise, we run across situations we get into, and you need something that we forgot, and you can go trailer to trailer, and I don't think there's anybody out there that won't reach in her pocket and give you $5 if you needed it, or
for sure.
give you anything.
Yeah.
So they're all really friendly people.
Well, and even though there are teams with more resources than others, this is still an individual driven thing. It's not a corporate sponsorship. It's not, you know, Budweiser isn't on the side of a truck anywhere. So these are people that want to be there and understand that they were in that same spot needing a hand, or they certainly will at some point. So there's kind of that really great racer karma that goes on out there, which is really cool. You mentioned that the big block engine hit hard on acceleration? And that's a question that I had because, you know, we see a lot of streamliners in particular that need a push vehicle. So we think that they don't have anything off the line, that they're not torquey, they don't have that sense of getting hit in the back of the head with a baseball bat, but apparently this one does.
Oh, it does, yeah. And because of our gearing, you do need to give it a shove to get it going. And but you can click that thing in gear probably 45 miles an hour, and it's just going to take off and go. Hmm. We do believe, too, like a drag car, that you need to get the car accelerating absolutely as quick as possible. So we've got a diesel truck that makes a little extra horsepower, that now we're pushing the cars a little harder than we did, just because we do want to get that acceleration as quick as you can going, mm-hmm. and start that momentum down the track.
And so what's the transmission in that?
That is a 7-speed Liberty billet, 7-speed Liberty transmission that's air shifted.
Okay. So your involvement, you're clicking the switch to shift?
Yeah, you're pushing the button on the steering wheel.
And so that's the other thing, is although this is basically a spaceship for technology, you're still driving this car.
Yes, that is something that was important to George, because there's all this technology that you can do this and you can do that. I mean, we do have some safety features on the car that are helpful in case of fires and different things, but George absolutely wants to drive the car. He wants to shift the car. He's in control of the car, mm-hmm. and he will. It's rare that you see George mad, but if you have to do something silly and have a computer shut the car off on him, you're going to see an angry side of George.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and he's of that generation that, they didn't grow up with the electronics and the computers, and quite honestly, you can't look through an electronic box and see what's going on. So there's a lot of people that get frustrated by that and question the reliability. You know, you don't question your left and right hand. And if you do screw up, you know you screwed up and why. Yeah. Or if a part breaks in half, you know what happened. But it is very frustrating with electronic glitches, because it could be the box, it could be a wire, it could be a connector, and you know, it's just not easy to see. This past year, we had a rainout. You gear up all year for this. What was kind of the goal, and are you guys going to kind of hang tight for 23, or do you continue to develop, or what happens in a situation like this?
Well, definitely, it's good that, it's very sad that it happened, because we couldn't run. It's the best part of my year. The good thing is, we didn't break nothing.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So there's that.
But the goal there is if we do our job right, we're pretty sure George can take that car to 500 safely and get it down to the other end and then back it up. So my goal, George's goal with me was to, he said, I'm pretty sure I can get you a black and a blue hat, is what he first told me. And then later on, he said, maybe you ought to just start out getting a blue hat and see where it goes. Mm. My goal is I'm probably the proudest guy on my red hat out there. There's a lot of passionate people out there, but I'm really, fortunate to have the people that helped me that I did. I would like to go 400 and get a record over 400 miles an hour. And then after that point, it's just time to see where it goes and see. George has stated that he's wanting to step out of the car. It takes a lot of money to finance a program like this. He's made some special offers to help assist, but we're going to have to figure out how we're going to do to keep the car running. Mm-hmm. We've already started this year. We actually had the car in a hub dyno last week, which is something we had not done. Mm. I recommend it to anybody, because having all the systems in the car and everything in place, and you can see some issues where you might have had a problem, and You know, if you're going a little eighth mile drag strip down the street from your house, you can go test it, and something breaks, you take it home and you go work on it and you go back. You lose a pass at Bonneville and it still costs you the same amount of money, and you, but you lost a pass.
Yeah, you can't come back tomorrow, and
you know, so yeah. So it's very important that, you know, when you show up there, you have your act together. So we are, we did do testing. We found some things.
I think I saw some thermal imaging photographs from that session.
Yeah.
And it looks like you guys found some heat sources or some things happening you can't normally see.
We changed some injectors, and we must have cut an O-ring, or some of the changes we did, we found that we have a lot of fuel pressure more. When I clipped the throttle, we actually caught the car on fire. And we have our good crew. We had Halon fire extinguishers right by the car. Brian Maxwell's on my side, on one side of me, and he just said, get out. And when he said, get out, I got out.
Yeah.
I didn't think I could get in and out of that car with the steering wheel on, but I did.
Really? Wow.
It's something that I thought about maybe putting on some fire gear, my Novex or something, the day before, but I didn't do it. I think it's important to all of us out there, and hopefully all of our listeners, that we always need to keep safety in the back of our head. Mm-hmm. When I get back in that car, even for a dyno test pull on the dyno, I'll be wearing some fire protection.
Yeah. Well, and you know, the SCTA is all about safety, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you, to get the license, you have to be able to basically shut the car down in the dark. You know, you got to be able to know where all the controls are and everything else without being able to see them.
And you have to do a bailout.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that you can get out of the car. I was talking to Bill Latin last night, and I thanked him again because I know whenever we've sent George down to the track you make a run and something does happen and the car is on fire or there's liquid in the pan, his first thing is always into the cockpit and looking around and seeing, did any fluids or anything get up into the driver area?
Mm.
And that is for safety for the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I watched it, and I've watched all this stuff so many times, but I definitely do appreciate it more. And I thanked him, you know, we're here at the show last night and we were having a cocktail and I saw him sitting there and I walked up and I thanked him for what he does.
That's cool. Yeah. Your position is interesting because a lot of times I think when you hear somebody who got to drive somebody else's car, you don't know the depth of that relationship and the depth of the experience that we'll call it guest driver had with that vehicle. But in your case, you've got experience for years with this thing, and although it's not yours, it made perfect sense for you to be able to get behind the wheel and have that familiarity and that understanding of what's going on behind you. And because of the level of sophistication and the speeds capable of that car, I think it's kind of a different story than the Jezel pickup truck, which is a little more user-friendly on a basic level. It's not as advanced and as specialized in requiring that level of understanding. So who else has driven that thing? Nobody, right? It's just been you and George.
That's it.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
It's very special.
For sure. And we can't thank Wayne enough for what he's done and gotten a lot of people a chance to go fast and experience this.
No, that truck has 10 red hats, and he's going to have a couple more, I'm sure. He's given a lot of people opportunities, including myself, and once again, like I said, the guys in the 369 Roadster, those guys, they treated me, it was almost, I don't know if I'm going to say, it was overwhelming and embarrassing the way they treated me when they wanted to help me get that licensing done. I wanted to go over and like help them, like maybe wipe the car off. Said, "Oh no, you just don't worry about it. You take care of the speed demon, and whenever you get ready, we'll have it sitting at the front of the starting line." And
wow.
And we made our pass, and we got in the car and raced to the other end of the track, and they were standing there waiting for me, and I put my driving suit and helmet back on, and was able to get my license. So that, you know, that everything was put in place, and it's all just a great group of friends, and you know, getting my rookie license and stuff. They take care of you. They tell you what to do, and it was helpful that I've been going to that track so much. I kind of know my way around it pretty good. Mm-hmm. But really the safety crew there, all the volunteers that help, it's just incredible people.
It is, and your point about they wanted to set the car up so that you could just get in and drive. I mean, you know full well that if somebody is going to, just for a fantasy, if there was somebody else that got invited to drive the Speed Demon, they don't have the experience of knowing the routine. You wouldn't want them around the car, you know, touching it before, because that's, you guys, that's figured out. You know, that's a ritual. You've got to make sure that's done right.
Yeah, I think it's important, too, if you're going to start going some of those speeds, that you better be very familiar with what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So changing gears a little bit, what's the mission here at the PRI show for you and ARP this year?
Well, we just, you know, we have over 5,000 cataloged items, and then we do special products for all forms of racing. So we catch up with our customers and let's face it, our friends. Mm-hmm. And it's always nice. You can see a new project that you need to be involved with, and there's a lot of great people that come by here, and so you know, we just looking to make more nuts and bolts.
Yeah, well, you've got a unique position of having a front row seat to basically all forms of racing, you know, because you guys are in everything.
Yeah, we are very fortunate there, and this is this venue here at PRI gives us the opportunity to run into almost all of those people.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, man, I appreciate the time. I appreciate you guys being so welcoming to myself and my wife, Kelly, out at the Salt. You know, a couple of years ago, we actually hosted a little birthday party for her out there and gave everybody cake. Remember that?
Yep, that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. So I wish you guys always continued success. Looking forward to, you know, hopefully someday that thing does crack the 500-mile-an-hour mark. We all know it can do it. It's just if nature and everybody else aligns. And if anybody wants to learn more about the Speed Demon program, is there a specific website or a Facebook page or something you steer people to? You can just go to Facebook and type in Speed Demon.
Speed Demon Racing.
Yeah, and you'll find it. It's kind of hard not to find stuff on that, but it's always good to hear the backstories. So thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so this has been the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. If you like this kind of stuff, you can click that subscribe button, and then, like magic, our next episode will appear right in your inbox. If you want to learn more about land speed racing, the full calendar of events is available at the scta-bni.org website. That's the official site of the Southern California Timing Association. And we'd like to thank our guest, Mr. Chris Raschke, and ARP and the Speed Demon program for joining us today. I'm Kevin Oste, coming to you from the 2022 PRI show in Indianapolis.